When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Want to teach your kids financial literacy but not sure where to start? Greenlight can help. With Greenlight, parents can keep an eye on kids' spending and saving, while kids and teens use a card of their own to build money confidence. As a parent, you can send instant money transfers, set up chores, automate allowance, and more. It's a convenient way to run your household, customized to your family's needs, and the easy way to raise financially smart kids. Get started with Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/pod.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Welcome to Believe in Celtics. I'm your host, Warren Shaw, and alongside me, as always, is the great Gary Washburn. We're your host resource for everything Celtics this season and all seasons. We are two games into the NBA Finals here as the Celtics take on the Dallas Mavericks, with the Boston Celtics holding a 2-0 lead. Gary just touching down in Dallas here now ahead of game three. Gary, what's good, brother? Nice to see you again.
Well, good to see you.
So, G, let's just kind of jump right into it, and then we'll kind of do some plugs again. I know you are, you know, burning the, you know, the candle at both ends here too. This series is, there's a toll on it for reporters and media. That is the unspoken story, I think, if you will, you know, of this situation. But getting in here to Dallas now, your thoughts, you know, on the first two games, what you've seen from Boston specifically, and then we'll get into a little bit of what adjustments Dallas can potentially make.
Well, I think the Celtics have played a really good series in terms of just defensively. I think they were definitely prepared for Dallas. Their 10 days off wasn't wasted. They were the game plan, how to defend them, how they wanted to defend them, not kind of taking the Minnesota route and doubling Luka. Just, hey, like, okay, Luka, you wanna put the team on your back, that's great, but you're not gonna have a lot of help, and you know, you can score all you want, but we don't want you get your teammates involved. So I thought the 89 points, allowing 89 points in the first game, was a masterful job holding Luka to one assist, and limiting the other guys. And I just thought the corner, you know, Dallas shoots the corner three, and they get all those lobs. That's how they were able to just kind of dominate Minnesota, and that just hasn't been the case. They have not gotten a lot of open looks. They have not. They've missed the open looks they've had. They haven't, you know, Gafford and Lively have not had much of an impact on the series. Kyrie Irving seems like he's lost out there. So it's kind of the Luka show, and Luka doesn't seem like, and I think we all seen throughout the playoffs, he hasn't quite been 100%, but now with his chest contusion, I think there's a kind of a discouragement there. I've been impressed with P.J. Washington. I thought he's played some good ball, but he hasn't really been hitting threes himself. He's kind of scored in the paint. So I think defensively the Celtics have played a masterful series so far. And quite honestly, if there was a game the Celtics were going to lose, it was going to be game two. They were 25% from the three-point line. They were not good offensively at all. And they were able to grind out that game and just kind of take advantage. Dallas wasn't good either from three. Dallas hasn't hit the three in the series so far. And the Celtics have just played better, been more prepared, been deeper. And it looks, I don't think many people expected this. I think people thought that Dallas was going to, you know, really show the Celtics, hey, we're the best team you guys have played by far in the playoffs. And, you know, you're not going to get away with the stuff you got away with against Indiana, Cleveland, and Miami. And, you know, and the Celtics have said, hey, we're good. We're a good team. And, you know, we don't care who we play. We feel like we're the best team on the floor. And that has been probably the biggest development in the series, is as Dallas has just seemingly looked nothing like the team that we saw kind of grow through the Western Conference.
And so, Gary, you know, I'll give some quick thoughts even in follow-up of that. You know, the narrative with Boston going into the playoffs, obviously, especially with the 9 days, was just all the rigmarole. And we previewed the series with, you know, Grant Efseth, you know, from SI before it began. And just the aspect of, you know, the Tatum-Brown stuff. And then you see after game one, Jason Kidd tries to, you know, his own level of gamesmanship, trying to bring some of that old narrative back into play. But when it comes down to what the Celtics have been able to show throughout the course of the regular season, you've been saying this, and I've definitely been backing you up in, is that, you know, they've responded to most things. And while they've had some of the old skeletons in the closet, you know, here and there, people, as you've alluded to many times, people want to just hold on to that. And like you said, here we go again. But it hasn't been here we go again, you know, with this team. They've been able to correct, you know, many of their errors. And now we're at a stage where this team, just people just looking for ways to continue to tear it down, despite, you know, hey, right now, what are they, 14-2, and, you know, in the playoffs here. And so while this series is a long way from being over, especially with Dallas returning home, I'm encouraged by the way the Celtics have been able to respond to all the negativity that has surrounded them. And lead me into this, or to get your take on this, the aspect of Jason Tatum. And we talked about this going into the finals. While he's not playing great basketball in terms of his overall percentages, right? 31% from the floor, 28% from three. He's almost averaging a triple-double, ironically, you know, with that, despite those lower percentages. But he said in the last post game, like, listen, we're so close to our goal. Why would I go out here now and try to spoil that by just because I need to score a bunch of points? He's still taking the most amount of shots, I think, you know, in the series, or, you know, on the Celtics side. But ultimately, your thoughts on the growth of Jason Tatum in this series, this playoff run specifically?
Yeah, I think he's just shown that he could be that all-around playmaker on the biggest stage. And it was obvious in game one that Jason Kidd devised a defense to trap him, to double him, to make sure he didn't get those comfortable drives to the basket and didn't get those comfortable mid-range jumpers and was going to be have contested threes. And he's decided, okay, I'm going to drive into the paint. I'm going to hit Drew in the dunker spot, or I'm going to distribute swing the ball out to the three-point shooters. I am going to make myself a playmaker and be that point forward that people think I can be and that he knows he can be. And I just think his decision-making has been pretty solid. He's made some questionable decisions, some passes here and there. But, you know, 17 assists to 9 turnovers, 2-1 almost. That's not bad. That's not great. But, you know, I think he can get better, you know. And he's had some shots that he probably should have gone down, and he's missed. I thought he missed a couple of layups in game two, missed a couple of threes, missed a couple of step backs that he usually hits. And I think those shots will eventually go down. But like you said, Warren, he's taken 38 shots in the two games, team leader by far. Jalen's next with 27. So he's averaging 19 shots a game. So it's not like he's not putting them up. Just not putting them up as much and not trying to prove a point and go head up with Luka and go, okay, I'm the best, you know, dude on the floor. I'm the top five player. I'm the best player in the league here. Like, that's not the agenda. The agenda is to try to win a championship. And I think he has played that role perfectly as kind of point forward, getting his other guys involved. And guys like Holiday and White have both flourished in that role. And, you know, both those guys are, you know, 11 for 27 combined from the three-point line. That's big, right? Yeah. You know, when you can get almost 50% shooting from your two kind of wing players. And meanwhile, Dallas has hit 13 threes as a team the entire
two games
series. And those players besides Luka from the three-point line are 5 for 32. So Luka's not getting any help, and Tatum and Brown are getting plenty of help.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's expertly said. And the other side of this, too, though, is while I thought Mizzou did an amazing job, and not to rehash game one per se, but you know, bringing Porzingis off the bench, even just for the aspect of, yeah, he's been out 5 weeks, but the bump it was able to get, kind of give from an energy standpoint for the crowd. I think you even saw that again a little bit in game two. Porzingis, I believe, had the best plus minus in game two with a plus 12, you know, in that game. And he was, in some ways, I think twice, he ended up being kind of like the Mavs run stopper. Missoula was like, they didn't like way things were going, call a timeout, inserted Porzingis. And you see the Celtics get a little bit more movement in their offense. While I don't think Porzingis is fleet of foot by any stretch of the imagination, he's more mobile than Al is, I think, obviously, at this stage of their career. And especially with the Porzingis willing to be able to shoot mid-range jumpers and even, you know, meander through the mid-range as opposed to just setting screens on the perimeter in the way that Al is kind of doing here now. But he didn't look great, you know, to close out the game. I know he said he'll die on the floor, and Mazzulla said he's fine. And he had zero concern, and Porzingis expects to play in game three. But your thoughts on, you know, Porzingis's impact in both games and his availability for the rest of the series?
Well, I think the game one was obviously the biggest development, was just his 20 points in 20 minutes and the ability for him to run the floor, play defense, block shots, all that stuff that we had seen this season. It come off that, you know, month off with that calf injury. I think last game two, he kind of came down to earth a little bit. Not that he was bad, but he was okay. You know, he was kind of a factor out there, but obviously not the factor that he was in game one. But you can't argue. Right now he's shooting 12 for 20 from the field, 10 rebounds, 5 blocks, in his limited time on the floor, in his 44 minutes he's played in the series. So it's been exactly a development that they needed. And, you know, I think that their offense probably got a little bit stale, a little bit stagnant at times in the Indiana series and the Cleveland series. And now you can see the ball whipping around. You can see the presence of what a healthy Porzingis brings to this team. We'll see if he's going to be ready for game three, what the injury. It looked like an ankle kind of tweak. It didn't look like a calf as much. I think it was kind of an ankle tweak. And I think that's a good development as opposed to a calf. So I think that maybe, you know, ice it up. And I think you know, I saw him and they showed him getting on the team plane. He was walking normally without a boot or anything like that. So I think he should be ready for game three.
Yeah, and I think obviously Boston wants that to be the proverbial case. You know, some of the advanced stats, if you will, while obviously a very, very small sample size in a two-game sample set, but 134 offensive rating for Porzingis with a 98 defensive rating. You alluded to the 5 blocks, especially with the chase down variety in some cases and blocking some guys on dunk attempts. Some pretty loud situations there too that can be momentum swings, I think, for Boston on the defensive side, which is really what I think they've been able to hang their hat on so far, you know, to take a take control of the series, you know, 2-0. So you're not concerned about his availability per se, but I do think his minutes are going to remain low, you know, somewhere in that 20 to 22, you know, probably at most for the remainder of the series. Or would you expect him, you know, hey, as a series, if the series continues to drag on, would he ramp back up in the 28 to 32 minute range?
I think they're going to bring him along slowly. I think 22 minutes is probably the max. I don't think he's 100%. And I know he's got to get back in basketball shape, but probably maybe, you know, when they get some practices in. But, you know, during the finals, it's hard to practice. You got this kind of just show practice where you're practicing at the arena. And, you know, I don't know how much real work they get in when the media, you know, gets excused out after the first 30 minutes. But I think you want to work on his conditioning, get his wind up, get his endurance up. And maybe if you need him for, you know, 30 minutes, maybe one game you can do that. But I think as long as they can get production out of Horford and they can win those Horford minutes, I don't think it's a necessary thing to put Porzingis in there for long stretches. You don't want to risk him re-entering it. You don't want to get him tired. I know a couple times in game two, it looked like he was getting a little winded out there, which is understandable. So you want to just measure that. But we'll see, you know, maybe – a practice on Tuesday and then, you know, maybe an early workout on Wednesday. Maybe he starts getting his wind back up to where he can start playing more minutes. But I think for now, I think they're good with the 20 to 22.
So many things to talk about, I think, with the Celtics. And, you know, obviously Drew Holiday was a hero in game two, especially with his 26 points and cutting, like, things, you know, made his first nine shots in the paint or whatever it was. But something that, before we kind of touch on Drew and even Derek White and their ability to impact the series, I do want to harken back to how we previewed the series and the Boston bench. And so now Porzingis has been, you know, the biggest contributor off that bench, you know, with the time that he's been there. But it's basically been Hauser and Pritchard, as we knew it would be. Hauser hit two threes in game one, not as effective, obviously, you know, in game two. Pritchard hits the 1-3, but it was a three to kind of close the quarter, you know, in the third quarter, you know, which extended the lead, I think, back up to nine at that point. But I know, I remember joking with Grant Assets when we were talking about it. He was not concerned about Boston's bench. It really was the front six. Is there any rabbits out of the hat that Mazzulla can pull here to get those guys, you know, going per se? I wouldn't say Hauser's had bad looks, especially in game two. He just missed all five of his 3-point shots. But is there anything Boston can do to generate and get those guys open if they're going to continue to be some minutes eaters, you know, through the course of these games?
No. I think with Hauser, he's got a lot of open looks. He just missed them, and that's a disappointing part. He's just had a bad postseason. I think in Miami he was pretty good, but then in Cleveland and I know Indiana, I think he was 1-for-14 from three in the postseason and in that series. And he's been struggling, 2-for-7 in this series. And you know, he's got to hit those open looks. So he's 5-for-27, if I do my math right, from the three since the Cleveland series. Sorry, since the Miami series. He was 5-for-8 in that closeout game, game five against Miami. And he has hit six since. And he's had a couple of 0-for games, including game two. You know, he was 1-for-14 in the Indiana series. And let me see here, 3-for-9 against Cleveland. So, you know, it's been a tough road. And Hauser's a guy that can break the game open. He can make big plays in terms of hitting those corner threes or hitting those threes. But he's got to knock them down. You know, he's got to be effective on the floor. And he got 5 3 attempts, Warren, and he only played 10 minutes. So they're going to take a chance on that. And if he misses all five, and I think that late run, I want to say before the third quarter, or I don't know, one of the quarters, like I want to say the end of the first, I could be wrong here, like Hauser missed 3 threes in the last 2 minutes of that quarter. I want to say it's the end of the third quarter before that Peyton Pritchard.
I remember the sequence. He got multiple looks and just you know, blanked. Yeah, yes. You know. So I guess the next question, and I know the answer, but is there any chance that Mazzulla would go any further into the bench, or is like, listen, I can't trust anybody else down there, especially, you know, because it would change the dynamic of the way Boston wants to play. You know, even if you were trying to get Tillman in there, he's not a 3-point shooter. Like, he can hit the corner three from time to time, but he's not going to shoot that with any semblance of regularity, you know. And Mihailo's just been out of the lineup for the entirety of the season. So it really is Hauser or Pritchard, and just whatever minutes and whatever they give you is what they give you, and just relying on the rest of that front six, correct?
Yeah. I just think, you can't just throw Sfee in there. I just think they're going to have to stick with Hauser and with Pritchard, and hopefully it opens up a little bit. Hopefully there is more of a rhythm and a flow for Hauser. He's a key guy, and, you know, you'd like to keep him around, and I know he's an inexpensive guy, but you're going to need a knockdown shooter in the playoffs. And I know, you know, I said Hauser was great in the Miami series, but since then he's been non-existent. You know, no double digit games, 3 games with 0 points, another 3 games with 2 points. The 4 games with 2 points. And then in that 11-game stretch since the Miami series, and it's tough because you could see the impact. He could have made things a lot easier on them last night if he had knocked down some of those threes.
Yeah, yeah, I agree 1,000%. Well, you talk about guys making impact. Let's go ahead and, you know, transition to, you know, Jrue Holiday and Derek White really quickly. While I didn't love all of Derek White's looks from three, I think he had a couple of the pull-up variety, some that I didn't, you know, in transition. And then he made two, I think, you know, with the shot clock winding down, you know, to still make four out of his 10 attempts, if you will. So 40% from the 3-point line. But what he's doing defensively, what Jrue Holiday is doing defensively, you know, is that something that, while I know we've seen this team kind of obviously throughout the regular season, you know, are you in any way surprised at the contribution those two guys are giving on both sides of the basketball at this stage, you know, in this moment?
No, not surprised at all. That pull up by Derek White was not the best decision off the break. But I think that 27 footer, he beat the shot clock.
Yeah.
I think they gave him a 10-point lead. It was going to be a 7-point lead, and Dallas is going to have the ball, maybe a chance to cut it to four. And that's just big plays, big game changing plays when you turn a 7-point lead into 10 like that. And defensively, White's been amazing. Obviously, the shot blocker, the chase down block on PJ Washington, and just been more of a nuisance for guys like Kyrie. More, you know, and he's been able to have to sometimes guard the bigs. You know, he has just done everything. And, you know, he has just been such an asset to this team, him and Jrue. And that's the thing about the depth of this team. When you bring all-star caliber players in to join other all-star caliber players, those players are going to make plays. And I think what Dallas doesn't have is you're relying on PJ Washington, who's never, I don't think, has played in a playoff game. He's played in a play-in game. But before this year, I don't think he ever played in a playoff game. And you're relying on him to be your number three guy. Derrick Jones Jr. is more of a defensive guy than he is a shooter, and they're getting nothing out of Josh Green. They basically benched and banished Tim Hardaway Jr. So we'll see. And then Jaden Hardy, I thought he'd get more minutes in game two after what he did at the end of game one, but he played a couple of stretches here and was okay, and then they pulled him back out. So the presence of Holiday and White have just been tremendous for this series.
Yeah, and that leads us right into the next and, you know, final phase of our conversation here this evening before, you know, game three will take place in the middle of the week here. Dallas's inability to score the basketball outside of Luka and even Kyrie / PJ Washington. I think, you know, Kyrie and PJ Vin may be equal to each other, which is not a recipe for Dallas's overall success. But the guy you touched on, and I think we talked about going into the preview, was, you know, I thought we might see more Tim Hardaway Jr. And I'm wondering if that will be what happens here in game three with Jason Kidd. They clearly need more shooting. He is a veteran guy, you know, obviously 31 years old, has been in the league a while, his dad, all of those things we know. And he's a guy who can get really streaky. You know, do you expect to see Tim Hardaway get a chance here, you know, and not just garbage minutes, get a real chance, you know, 15 maybe to 18 minutes off the Dallas bench to see what he's able to do here to spark some life into that Dallas offense?
Yeah, I do. I thought him and Hardy, I thought, would play more minutes in game two. But I don't know what Hardaway did. I know defensively, apparently, you know, I mean, I've never seen him as a great defensive player, but, you know, he's considered a liability. So if I'm Jason Kidd, I'm sure he's just like, hey, I can't afford to have that guy out there like that. But in a series where points, you need scoring, you might need to go, especially at home cooking, home fans. He's very comfortable there. He will be able to put up some points. And I just think Jason Kidd's got to figure out something. And I'm sure he'll go. He's in the lab right now trying to figure out how to get his team to crack 100, let alone, like, you know, 110 or anything like that. But he's got to make some changes, and he's got to take some chances too, because at this point, if you just stick with the conventional, you're probably going to lose. You're going to lose quickly. So you're going to have to dig deep into that bench and figure out if there's a guy there that can give you a spark, or is it more Derek Lively minutes, more Gafford, those post-ups. I thought that was kind of effective toward the end of game two, where they just kind of dumped the ball into Gafford, and the Celtics didn't really guard him with a center. They guarded him with White, and Tatum. And Tatum, and he went to work there. But, you know, is that, can Gafford do that for 40 minutes or for 35 minutes? Or is he, you know, he's more of a dunk guy, a dunk lob guy. But, you know, it's going to take some real coaching from Jason Kidd to try to make this a competitive series at this point, because I think they're kind of running out of bullets and their options. And remember, Warren, we have not gotten a good Tatum game yet, not even close. Right. Jalen was not great in game two offensively. Like, there's been some, you know, the Celtics shot 25%. They probably, if you think, shot their worst game of the series from three in game two. They're probably going to come back and be better, as much as the Mavericks are going to be better. I thought the Celtics played a B-minus game in game one and won by 18. And I thought they played a C game in game two and won by 7. So the Celtics are – they're due for an A game, right? I mean, an A-minus game. They're due for one of those, you know, 18-19-3 games, and they're due for a Jason Tatum 30-point game, and not him trying to get 30, but just hitting, if it's 22 shots, him hitting, you know, 13 or 14 instead of 6. So the Mavericks got to be careful of that, too. It's not just – I think it would be different, Warren, if the Celtics had played this – remarkable, flawless first two games, and the Mavericks will say, okay, they can't play any better than that. You know, we got a shot here, but that's not been the case. Like, there's a lot of room for improvement on the Celtics side, excuse me.
Yeah, I would agree with that so much, Gary. You know, and if you're a Celtics fan, that has to give you some semblance of hope here of, like, this is really their series in essence to lose. And not trying to make bold proclamations, but you're right. Boston has not played an amazing basketball game, and you know that the way they shot the three in game two and was still able to pull it out it says a lot again about their overall resolve and how they can score and their willingness to let other guys kind of lead, like letting Drew Holiday, not letting, but you know, knowing Drew had the hot hand and Drew making those read, being in the dunker spot, cutting for the 3-point line and finding and making, giving angles to Tatum to be open so he could finish, you know, to give Boston what they needed offensively while still playing the amazing defense that we know he's known for. I will say this though, you know, going home, the old adage, you know, I think Shaq says it all the time, you know, the others usually find their stroke a little bit better. Dallas knows they can't go down 0-3 because you all know, you know, the old adage is there. If you go down 0-3, you know, no team's ever kind of come back. And Boston has to be prepared to get Dallas's best, truly their best shot here on Wednesday night. But there's a lot of room for Boston itself to continue to improve. And, you know, I'll be really watching to kind of see what happens and what's Jason Kidd's next move. But Mazzulla has been able to figure things out, settle the team down. And as I alluded to in the preview, I've just been really impressed with Boston mimicking Mazzulla's messaging kind of throughout. That trust is really permeating kind of throughout, and we just it's palpable. It's a very, very stark difference from the team that we saw a year ago, and Boston seems to be on the right path here. One guy I guess we need to talk about really quickly before we sign off, Kyrie Irving. While we know the defense has been just expert, and everybody who's been picked up on him has done their best to stay in front of him and even picked him a couple of times, even picked the great ball handling skills of Kyrie Irving, which is surprising. You know, we know there's another level for him to get to, and, you know, him getting home. I know he said, hey, he'll see the Boston crowd. He'll see you in game five, et cetera, et cetera. But just what do you think Kyrie can actually do different besides just playing better? What can he or Jason Kidd do to be more effective and impactful, to kind of really give the second star that Luka still hasn't had here while they're still waiting for a third guy, you know, to be consistent, you know, in the PJ Washingtons or whoever else, you know, that's on that roster?
Yeah, I think he can probably initiate the offense more, kind of take the ball up the court, kind of pass it to get it back. Also, he's got to be more aggressive, attack the rim, try to get to the free throw line, try to give himself some easy buckets instead of taking everything contested. They're making him go left, and you know he's got a good left, great left hand, but you know he's going left full speed, then trying to make a left-handed layup, or he's got to stop and make a right-handed layup. You know they're not giving him anything. Yeah, they're not giving him anything easy. Yeah. And he's not hit the three. I think he's 0-for-8 from the 3-point line in the series. So he's got to be better. I mean, and I don't know what you think, Warren, but it is just a matter of hitting shots. Like, I don't think, you know, schematically, oh, well, Kidd can post him up. No, you're not going to post up Kyrie. You know, you can have him come off screens and maybe, but he's not really a catch and shoot three guy. He's more of a pull up three guy. So, I mean, could you get set him up for more catch and shoots? You know, can you have him do little things like go back door and you know, cut, you know, back cut and maybe get a couple of layups there? You know, you might have to do little things to get his confidence going. I thought it was going. He would start out 4 for 5. It was like, okay.
True. Yeah, in game 2, yeah.
It's one of those Kyrie games. Okay, he might be in for a 30 ball, and then suddenly he just slowed down. And you know, we just haven't seen, unfortunately. Because I just thought, you know, everybody wants to see their players play their best, but he just has not had the type of series or impact at all. And this is a guy who just had everything going before the playoffs. I mean, you know, 35% from the field, you know, 4 assists, 2.5 rebounds, a steal, like nothing that stands out, right? But he's, you know, he's 13 for 25 on two, so he's not getting killed on two. Sorry, 13 for 29, but he's only has 8 assists in the series. He's just not 5 turnovers. You know, he's gotten to the free throw line twice in the series. Like, that's all that's got to change. He's got to be more active, get to the free throw line. And that's the fundamental problem. And the thing is, Warren, if you look at it, the Mavericks have been to the free throw line, you know, 43 times and the Celtics 39, and just missed 15 free throws in the series.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that's the thing. You can't say they're officiating or they're going to get some home cooking with the calls. Maybe they'll get a couple of more calls. But Luka and B.J. Washington have gone, you know, 23 times. Tatum's gone to the free throw line in this series 8. So, right? I mean, Jaylen's gone 15. He's been the more aggressive player. But it's not like they've gotten some bad calls or, you know, you could maybe question that block on Washington and think, oh, that was a foul. Jaylen might have hit him in the back or whatever. But I don't know if any referee, unless you're Usain Bolt, is going to be fast enough to see that contact that's not on a replay.
Homer. I thought that was so minimal. You know, I don't think it was. And PJ jumped too early. So.
Oh, yeah. He got hung and all that. Like, he was trying to go up for one of those two-handed dunks, and he went too early. But, you know, so – if you look at the Mavericks, like, the Celtics can look at themselves and go, we can play a lot better than this. You know, Jason can play a lot better. Jaylen can play better. We've talked about Hauser. He can play better. Porzingis can do a little bit more. Horford, like, all those guys can play better. Like, this is not
it's not the peak of Boston Powers at all.
Yeah, this is not a situation where the Mavericks can come home and go, we've taken their best two shots – and we can still, like, you know, they're not going to play this well in Dallas. Like, they haven't played well, especially offensively. If I'm looking at my numbers here, you know, they are 46% from the field, 32% from the free throw line, for 3-point line in the series. They're shooting 32%. That's not good.
Yeah.
Dallas is shooting 25%. So, it's been two rock fights pretty much. But the Celtics has been a better team overall.
Yeah, plus 27 in game 1 from 3 for the Boston Celtics. I think plus 12 in game 2. Celtics lost the rebounding battle, have lost the, you know, the points in the paint battle, but still find themselves up 2-0. So that spells danger, I think, if you're Dallas. But desperation is really the order of the day for the Dallas Mavericks as head into game 3, you know, as they try to what would essentially be saving their season here, you know, trying to get back into this series, you know, by getting at least one game here, and then at least giving them a chance to get back to Boston. That'll do it here for this week's edition of Believe in Celtics. You know, Gary is a tired individual, been working really, really hard to give you all some great Celtics coverage. So please support him. Follow his writings over at the Boston Globe. His Twitter page, as always, G Washburn Globe. You can follow me at Shaw Sports NBA as well, too. And make sure you follow Believe at Believe Sports. Gary, thank you so much for spending some time and giving the Celtics fans some insight into the series. Your take, as always. And we'll catch you here down the line here and catch all the Celtics fans on the line here a little bit, probably sometime after game 4. Thank you all so much. Have a good one, y'all. We'll catch you next time. Peace. We'll be right back.
At your job, do you ever have to deal with a nose roller? How about a snub pulley? Well, if you're installing a new conveyor belt system, dealing with the different components can sound like you're speaking a foreign language. Luckily, you've got a team ready to help. Grainger's technical product specialists are fluent in maintenance, repair, and operations. So whenever you want to talk shop, just reach out. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Summer is supposed to be an opportunity to slow down, but when you look at your kids, you can't help but notice that your kids are growing up fast. Help them build independence as they grow with Greenlight. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families, where parents can keep an eye on kids' money habits, while kids learn how to save, invest, and spend wisely. It's the easy, convenient way to raise financially smart kids. Get your first month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
At Ashley, you'll find colorful furniture that brings your home to life. Ashley makes it easier than ever to express your personal style with an array of looks in fun, trending hues to choose from earth tones to vibrant colors to calming blues and greens. Ashley has pieces for every room in the house in the season's most sought-after shades. A more colorful life starts at Ashley. Shop in-store, online today. Ashley, for the love of home.
If you're a facilities manager at a warehouse and your HVAC system goes down, it can turn up the heat, literally. But don't sweat it, Grainger has you covered. Grainger offers over a million industrial-grade products for all your operations, including warehouse HVAC maintenance. And even better, they offer access to experts and fast delivery, so you and your warehouse can both keep your cool. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.